welcome to another episode of the Mark Kreslin Show here, live on the Veritas Radio Network, the Crusade Channel, Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Central Time, followed by my good friend Mike Church and the Mike Church Show. As a live call-in program, that means you can actually call in anytime you'd like by picking up your smartphone, opening up your keypad, dialing the numbers, or pressing the numbers, I should say, more accurately, 844-5-CRUSADE, 844-527-8723. It really is that easy. I'd like to also direct you over to my website, markkreslins.com. You can read my latest article, Thinking Like a Pilgrim, and boy, how much that is needed today to get us out of the status quo thinking that millions, literally millions and millions of people are trapped in. Also, while you're there, please download that, read it. It's important, not because I wrote it, but because the concepts are important. You know, we all know we're in this huge mess, right? And so, as we all know, there's a common phrase out there, it's insane to do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result. Well, yes, it would be suggestive that the people in these United States are insane. And there may be evidence that that's actually true, because we seem to keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Well, if at some point we realize that's not the way to go, well, we've got to think differently about things. We've got to try to figure out, well, okay, if that's not working, what will work out there? And so that's what this show is all about. That's what the Veritas Radio Network is all about. We are offering a different brand, different kind of thinking about the mess that we face here in these United States. So we're glad you have joined us this morning. Also, if you'd like to email me anytime throughout the show, you can always email me at mark@markkreslins.com. That's markkreslins.com. Please consider also going over to the Facebook page and liking the page. It's another way for us to stay in touch. Facebook/The Mark Kreslin Show. And it's where I post articles that I talk about on the show. You know, yesterday we were talking about the importance of dates as it relates to the Constitution and understanding our history, the whole narrative of our history from 1776, declaring independence, all the way to 1790 when Rhode Island became the 13th state to ratify the Constitution, and why that matters. Because so often, folks, you know this. I mean, you hear these same things that I hear. So often, people will claim to be "quote unquote" constitutionalists. They'll claim to support the Constitution, and we've got to get candidates in there who support the Constitution. And I always, you know, I had to be careful because I used to say those same things, and so I want to be careful not to be, you know, overly judgmental. I remember. When I first began pastoring and leading churches, I had a fellow tell me, an old pastor tell me, he said, "Listen, remember, Mark, every time you're in the pulpit and you're pointing a finger out at the audience, you've got three pointing back at yourself." And it was a legitimate, you know, lesson he was teaching me. It's very easy to get on a high horse when you have come to embrace truth. And so that applies to both Scripture, when you're proclaiming Scripture, and it applies to what we talk about here on the air. I always want to be cautious to remember my own pilgrimage and from whence I came. But there was a time that I would have called myself a constitutionalist, that all we needed to do was get back to the Constitution, never really pausing to examine that statement, never pausing to wonder, why do we have to keep saying, get back? And when did we depart? When did we depart the Constitution? So if my assertion was right, the solution rested in getting back to the Constitution, then that begs the question, or at least is suggestive, that there was a time we were with the Constitution. And so I spent a good time, deal of time yesterday, talking through the whole process of how we arrived to the Constitution. We talked a little bit about the ratification of the Constitution, when the Constitution was ratified, and the purpose of that was to draw attention to the fact that the Constitution has been a process, and almost immediately after its final ratification, and Congress is now assembled, those people who were elected, the first elected representatives to Congress, actually began violating it again. They began violating it. So this idea that all we need to do is get back to the Constitution, I want to ask the question now, when exactly was the Constitution operative? You know, when was it functioning as this document that supposedly gave limitations to a government and limitations that government would not be able to exceed? And I had an interesting conversation on Facebook with a gentleman yesterday about this very issue, because I posted an issue about, I posted a meme about how it's not okay to, it's okay to be wrong, but it's not okay to stay wrong, something along those lines. And he jumped right on, and I had put a little commentary on the meme about, even if we're wrong about history, it's okay to be wrong. It's just better to admit our error and then, admit our error and correct the error. It's okay to be wrong. I was wrong about my understanding of the Constitution. I was wrong about saying all we need to do is restore it, and somehow that'll fix it. And now I spend my days correcting that error. Well, this fellow jumped on my Facebook post, and he said, bad example, on this whole idea of getting our history wrong about the Constitution, because clearly, and I mentioned in my meme also that, let me read what I said. That'll be just easier. Hold on a second. Let me get to my Facebook page here. By the way, I don't know how many of you saw this last night, but the Oklahoma City Thunder beat the Golden State Warriors last night. I was up way too late and got up way too early this morning, but it was a great game. I don't know if you all saw it. It was really a very good game. So here's what I wrote. The meme said this: don't cling to a mistake just because you spent a lot of time making it. Fair enough. Don't cling to a mistake just because you spent a lot of time making it. So I wrote this. I said, for example, if you got your history wrong about the Philadelphia Convention and believe God, quote unquote, inspired the writings of the Constitution, don't stay wrong about that. Admit that you're wrong, correct the error, and it's that simple. It's really no more complicated than that. Well, I wrote that. And a fellow, a well-meaning fellow, I don't have any axe to grind with him in particular, he jumped on, he said, bad example, Kreslins. Endowed by our Creator is pretty straightforward. The founders and the framers were Christians, and that shaped the government they created. And you've heard this narrative if you've been in the Christian community probably many times before. The founders were all Christian, therefore the Constitution undoubtedly was created to create a Christian nation, or these ideas that this is a divinely ordained country, and which inevitably leads to rhetoric about taking it back. This leads to the common Christian nation rhetoric we hear, and then that leads to, we have to take it back, we have to make it a Christian nation again. Well, number one, good luck with that. But really, the more important question is there evidence to suggest that the Constitution was uniquely created to be a Christian nation, to create a Christian nation? And so we got into a long, discussion on Facebook about it, and I started pointing out historical realities, not narratives about what we want the Constitution to be or what we want the Philadelphia Convention to be, but actual narratives, actual historical facts about how they got off track right out of the gate. And I implored the fella and the others that were following it that if we buy a narrative that makes this Constitution nearly divine or pristine, and we run around saying things like, well, all we need to do is restore it, we have to analyze a couple of things. We have to analyze, number one, was it ever fully functioning? Was it ever restraining the government? Was there a time we can point to that it actually, you know, had that limiting effect? And that was where I got to some of the dates. And if not, why not? We have to then ask the second question. We have to examine it and say, well, if it made the claim, if we believe the Constitution made the claim that it was a restraining document, it was going to limit the authority, the power, the growth, whatever you want to call it, if it was going to limit this government, did it? It's really no more complicated than that. Was there a time it was fully functioning? Can we point to it? So if we believe all we have to do to restore it, what does it look like? What does the government look like when it's being restrained? And if we come to the conclusion the thing went off the tracks right away, which I have come to that conclusion, and I have the history to back it up, if we come to the conclusion that this thing went off the tracks right away, now the next question is to examine, well, if it can't be restored to anything, what went wrong with it? Why didn't it meet these lofty goals of restraining the government from exceeding and growing into a tyranny? Why didn't it? You see, and this is where we really have to get to. We must get to this point where a large number of people are willing to say, why didn't it work? See, because when you can do that, now you're in the arena of coming up with real solutions to the problems we face today. Because so many people will still nostalgically believe that somehow in some pretend other day, the Constitution was fully functioning. Now, there is certainly evidence that the U.S. federal government did not quite have the influence in the early generations of this country that it has today. I wouldn't even want to argue that, because that's not... It would be a ridiculous argument for me to make that it was just as tyrannical in 1794 as it is today. Well, in some cases, when you look at the Whiskey Rebellion, maybe it was, though 1860 certainly would set the new standard for the federal government threatening to kill people, because they actually did. So I'm not going to suggest for a second that the government we have today that literally monitors and watches every area of our lives was the same government that was functioning the same way back in the early 1800s, the late 1700s. I'm not going to suggest that. Yes, there is the government. The federal government did not have much involvement in your life if you lived in 1795, if you lived in, you know, 1820, nothing like today. There wasn't an income tax, or a periodic income tax, but there wasn't a standardized income tax every person in this listening audience was raised under, where you, on a given day and a given year, are going to disclose to the federal government how much you made. That's just a constant reminder of the power the government has over us, this constant propaganda. Every April 15th, you are going to, under the force of law, disclose your income. Now, they didn't face that in 1820. They didn't face that in 1870. You know, they didn't have these same agencies, the EPA, who will tell you that if they, you know, dammed up a creek on their property, they could be fined $75,000 a day. They didn't have that. And so it was over a period of 200 years that this thing gained the power that it has to where it is today. But Christians and conservatives and constitutionalists will run around and claim that all we need to do is restore it. How many times have you heard that yourselves? If we just restore, I see it on my Facebook, oh gosh, a number of times a week. We just need to dust it off and start obeying it. Well, that's kind of political rhetoric masquerading as a solution. I know it feels good and it sounds good to say things like that, but number one, when people say that, they never, ever provide a process for restoring the Constitution. They never once will tell you a time when it actually was functioning. It's kind of like a bowl of, you know, chicken noodle soup when you got a cold. It just feels good. If there's something that just feels historic about it, it's nostalgic. It takes us back to a time when we thought things were better. Well, certainly I would tell you on a technological basis, things are a lot better in this century than they were in the 18th century. Number one amongst them, we have plumbing. We have coffee makers. So things are much better in this century than they were in past centuries economically. Now, culturally and socially, you know, I think sometimes we have this idea that it was Little House in the Prairie across the plains in all of America as it went westward and headed south and grew. Well, in some cases, it was definitely a simpler life. It was definitely more moral-minded. I mean, transgenderism, I guarantee, was not something they struggled with in 1839. There wasn't a policy issued by the president that all saloons will provide a gender-neutral bathroom. There may have been people that were gender confused, but there were taboos, there were social stigmas that restrained that kind of behavior publicly. So, yeah, there could be a case made that they were more moral. They had a simpler way of life. There were more societal values that were present, that were agreed upon by the vast majority, and I mean the vast majority of the society, but it wasn't without debauchery and decadence even then. So I get why people want to nostalgically make statements like we've just got to restore the Constitution. I really do. And again, I used to say the same thing. If they would just obey the Constitution. Though we have to now take a step back from that kind of rhetoric, right? We've got to take a step back and we've got to be honest with the situation we face. Whatever the Constitution was supposed to be, it ain't that today, right? I think we can all, can I get an amen on that? It ain't that today. So when we hear the phrase, even on mainstream talk radio, and I was listening the other day, and I didn't hear exactly those words, restore the Constitution, but something very close to it. And it usually comes across as we need to elect constitutionalists as presidents. That's the only president I'll ever vote for. I did hear Levin, I think last night, say something like that. That's the only president we should be voting for is a constitutionalist. Well, I want to ask Levin, I wonder if Levin supported Romney, Mr. Constitutional himself. Do you remember that debate? Excuse me. Remember that debate when Ron Paul was on the stage with him and Romney was asked a 10th Amendment question, and I think it was Wolf Blitzer kept pressing him for the answer. And finally, it became very clear Romney didn't have a clue about the Constitution, and he laughed. He had that kind of nervous laughter. and he looked over to his left, and he said, "We should probably ask Congressman Paul here. He's the constitutionalist on the stage." And I thought, shame on every person that called themselves a constitutionalist and voted for Mitt Romney. Shame on Mark Levin for saying we only should vote for constitutionalists. When I guarantee he voted for Romney, I guarantee he voted for McCain, I guarantee he voted for Bush, I guarantee he voted for Dole, I guarantee he voted for Bush the first, and then Reagan. Guarantee it. In his lifetime, he voted for all those GOP candidates. Not one of them was a quote-unquote constitutionalist. Not one of them pressed would be able to give you a clear originalist interpretation of their Article II powers. Not one of them would be able to give you a clear originalist interpretation of Article I, Congress's powers. Yet today the clarion call is, we've got it, we can only support a constitutionalist. This is from the leaders of the quote-unquote conservative movement. And to those guys, I have a harsher criticism, because they have assumed the mantle of leadership, i.e. their talk shows. They are out there educating millions of people with inaccurate history. I call them hypocrites. I call them opportunists. Especially a guy like Levin. Now, I probably have a little lesser indictment against Hannity and Limbaugh. They're probably more just like me. They just don't know at this point. Beck knows, but Beck ignores. Beck allows his Mormon theology to guide much of his political ideology. But Levin, the supposed the great one, the constitutionalist, has made the assertion that we only vote for constitutionalists. Well, I can guarantee he's voted for people who didn't have a clue about the Constitution. I'll bet you his own member of Congress that he's voted for, wherever he lives, doesn't have a clue about the Constitution. So to the average person who says, all we need to do is restore the Constitution, a lot of these folks are getting it from the mainstream talk radio. Excuse me. Most people themselves don't know the Constitution very well. Let's be honest. The only reason I have such a strong position that I have today is because I learned it. I actually took time to learn it. I actually took time to read a great deal of the discussions and debates during the ratification. I read Madison's notes on the Constitution. I read Robert Yates, Luther Martin's views of the Constitution. I took the time to read it, but I didn't, you know, it wasn't a weekend. Believe me, it wasn't a weekend. It was months and months and months of grinding, learning. But then as I learned about the Constitution, suddenly all that political rhetoric, that political propaganda of restoring the Constitution faded. Suddenly, I began to be critical of those concepts, and I would self-condemn, if you will. It's like, how did I ever believe that? Well, I had a knowledge deficit. I didn't know the Constitution. So that which you don't know, you really can't critique. So I didn't know it. I would run around claiming I knew it. Now think about this. Think about this from my life story. I was a senior legislative assistant working on Capitol Hill for two members of Congress over different periods of time, and charged with the responsibility to work for the congressman that I was working for, who had the responsibility to uphold his oath to the Constitution that he took. And in my office, and I'm pretty sure it was most other offices as well, not one time did any of us ever take out the Constitution. Heck, the reality is, without naming names, I can still see the faces of folks in my offices that I worked. None of them knew anything about the Constitution either. I didn't, and neither did anybody else. We didn't know anything about it. We knew how to write legislation. We knew how to format it properly. We knew how to send out Dear Colleague letters to elicit support. We knew how to read polls and read sentiment in our congressional district to know how to vote so we can stay in office. We were experts at all that. But the Constitution? Ah, that's what the parliamentarian's there for. That's what the Supreme Court is there for. I remember in one of my most naive moments, as I began my political career back in the early 80s, I thought, well, while we're writing this legislation, why don't we send a copy over to the Supreme Court to see if it's constitutional? That was my limits of understanding the Constitution. Let's see what those 9 politically connected attorneys in black dresses think about our legislation we want to put in. That was the extent of my knowledge about the Constitution. Let's go to somebody who should know a lot about it and ask them if we can do this. But it wasn't just me, friends. Don't think it was just me. My boss didn't know anything about it, the congressman. So this rhetoric is of let's just restore the Constitution is actually in a very, very simple way, a very dangerous idea, because it excites people's hopes that there's actually some process, some button you push, some questionnaire you fill out that gets us back to the Constitution. It's very dangerous because it's elusive, but yet it sounds concrete. It distracts people from looking at the real problem. It makes them believe there was a time when they were. It puts people like Hamilton and other founder or framers on pedestals that they got it right. We just blew it. It ignores the historic record. It distracts people from even thinking about the historic record. It actually angers people when they hear that rhetoric challenged. And I've had people just fold their arms and get as angry at me as. You can see it in their eyes when you've done any public speaking and you have an audience there in front of you and you say something controversial, and here's the typical posture. They lean back, chin goes down a little bit, arms crossed. Wait a minute here, bucko. Don't you dare challenge that Constitution. I'll throw you right off that stage right now. That Constitution is a sacred document. Kreslins, and you shut that pie hole up there and you get back to talking about how we get the GOP into power, or we'll throw your rear end right off the stage. And you can see it. You can actually see people getting angry at you. Well, I press ahead. Thank goodness for PowerPoint. I'll tell you, because then you can start throwing up screens or slides that paint a picture. You can create little timelines. You can put on there the Whiskey Rebellion. Then you could ask thoughtful questions about whether or not President Washington had power in Article 2 to call up 13,000 troops and march them into to Western Pennsylvania to put down a tax rebellion. Did he have the authority in Article 2? You can ask questions about the Sedition Act of 1798, and then suddenly the arms start to unfold, and people start to, their eyes, their chins come up a little bit, and because they've just been told something they've never heard before. They, in their mind, believed that the Constitution really failed because they get told this from mainstream talk radio on January, whatever the day was, in 2008 when Obama took the oath of office. They've been told that that's when the Constitution ended. that's why it's necessary to create Hillary as the next Antichrist, so that that population will then grow comfortable with the idea that what Obama started to kill in 2008, Hillary's going to finish it off. Of course, the premise is just before 2008, the Constitution was functioning. Do you see how tricky this is? Do you see how alluring it is? We seek simple solutions to very complex problems, and mainstream talk radio, conservative talk radio, is there to offer it to you. Mainstream conservative publications is there to offer it to you. Heck, the entire GOP establishment is there to offer you this very simple, alluring, but elusive, nostalgic, warm feeling that if we just restore the Constitution, we can fix this mess. It's very tantalizing, isn't it? Because if that could happen, well, then the process is sold to us. All we need to do is get the GOP in the power. Well, now my job is really easy as Joe Sixpack. All I need to do is go to the polls in November and press a button. And if what everybody's told me, the GOP, mainstream conservative talk radio, mainstream conservative publications, if they're all saying that is going to mean the restoration of the Constitution somehow, I don't stop and ask questions about how. That's not my job. My job is to be a listener and a voter. If they're all telling me that getting the GOP in will equal the restoration of the Constitution and that somehow will fix the problem, well, heck, my job's easy. All I got to do is remember to set the alarm clock on that Tuesday in November, walk into a polling place, walk over to a ballot, press it, and, you know, I've been told now that if I do that faithfully, the Constitution will get restored, and, you know, then the problems will go away. After I've done my civic duty, I voted with my flag sticker on my lapel, and I wear it proudly, and I showed them progressives. They're not going to kill the Constitution. I'm not letting those devils in the Democrat Party kill the Constitution. Oh, no, no, no. I just voted for the GOP. And they're going to get what's coming to them. They're going to get a restoration of the Constitution. Look at my lapel sticker, bucko. I just voted. And I'm showing them. Without ever analyzing the success of that strategy, we doom ourselves to doing the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over again until we no longer can expect different results, because the noose of tyranny is so tight around your neck and you begin to feel it at a very personal level, that you know what your option will be, and you know what most people will do. As Mike plays, he's coming up with his own imaging on an accordion. People will fold like an accordion. They will get in line. They will obey their new overlords. The process of an enslavement of a people will then be complete. There will be pockets of resistance, but those puny little pesky pockets can easily be stamped out. But the majority will say, give me my soup, please. I'm hungry. That is what following the status quo leads to, friends. That is where the current trajectory of we just got to restore the Constitution as a some kind of a strategy, that's where that leads to. It leads to nothing but hardship. It leads to nothing but total government control. And they've already taken large steps in that direction. We have relative freedom today, relative to how much the government wants us to be free or allows us to believe we're free. But don't think those freedoms can't be locked down pretty quickly. How many of you got notices from the IRS this year saying you owed $2,300 because you did not comply with a government obligation? Government. How many of you panicked when you filled out your IRS forms worrying about whether you disclosed everything properly? How many of you have had to run across the EPA when you are trying to build something on land you think you own? How many of you go to the gas pump and say, geez, I wish the gas prices weren't so high? How many of you are fearful of your public schools today because of questions that are asked about your family? How many of you are afraid of your pediatricians because they might ask about how many guns come into your home? How about the TSA? We all line up, don't we? Don't we all get in those lines? Why? Because the government told us to. See how powerful government power can and how easily it can be exerted over you? We've all seen the TSA reports on Drudge Report the past couple days, right? People get in lines when they don't believe there's any other way. Don't think this strategy of restoring the Constitution won't lead to bigger lines. And you know what? We both know that the vast majority of people will get in those lines. Stay tuned, folks. We'll talk about this a little bit more when I come back. We'll be right back.